The Universality of Sufism. The Ab Aeterno Origin of Sufism, by Sufi Inayat Khan. Sufism may be described as an inner directedness towards God. The germ of Sufism is supposed to have existed from the beginning of the human creation, for wisdom is the heritage of all, so no one person can be said to be its proposer. It has been revealed more clearly and spread more widely from time to time as the world has evolved. Rabbani Ayan is the word used in Quran for scholars, or people of knowledge of all genres. Sufism as a brotherhood may be linked back to the period of Daniel. We find Hatim, the best-known Sufi of his time among the Zoroastrians. The chosen ones of God, the salt of the earth, who responded without hesitation to the call of Abraham, Moses, Jesus, and Muhammad, were Sufis and were not only simple followers of a religion but had insight into divine knowledge. They recognized God's every messenger and united with them all. Before the era of Muhammad, they were known as Ikhwan ul-Safa, brothers of purity, but during his time, they were named by him Sahabi Safa, knights of purity. The world has called them Zoroastrian, Christian, Jewish, or Islamic mystics, and the followers of each religion have claimed them as their own. For instance, a Christian would claim that Saint Paul was a Christian and a Muslim that Shams Tabriz was a Muslim. In reality, neither Christ was a Christian nor Muhammad was a Muslim, but Sufi. A ridiculous analogy, disregarding the crystal-clear Quranic injunctions in this regard. The Unity of Knowledge, by Idris Shah. Connection between the ancient practical philosophies and the present ones is seen to have been based upon the higher-level unity of knowledge, not upon appearances. It explains why a Muslim Rumi had Christian, Zoroastrians, and others as his disciples. Why the great invisible Sufi teacher Khadr is said to be a Jew, why the Mughal prince Darius Shikoh identified Sufi teachings in the Hindu Vedas yet remained a member of the Qadiri order, how Pythagoras and Solomon can be said to be Sufi teachers. It also explains why Sufis will accept some alchemists to have been Sufis, as well as understanding the underlying developmental factors in Rumi's evolutionary philosophy or Halaj's Christianity, why, indeed, Jesus is said to be standing, in a sense, at the head of the Sufis. Seems an appealing, universalistic and inclusive approach but Majaab obscured from Quranic concepts, poetry of the two Tasawwuf stalwarts, Jalaluddin Rumi and Ibn Arabi, reflect on the Sufi thought process in the same vein. In my opinion, Sufis belong to Islam only, as monks or rabbis, and sadhu sants belong to other religions, so, in general, they may be named mystics but not Sufis. A different point of view about the origin of Sufism. Sufism is said to have originated during the time of Prophet Muhammad, 7th century CE. Almost all traditional Sufi orders trace their chains of transmission back to the Prophet via his cousin and son-in-law Ali ibn Abi Talib, except the Naqshbandi order that traces its origin to Caliph Abu Bakr. Hakim al-Nazaburi's Al-Nishapur refers to them, before the use of the term Sufi in the 9th century, as Zuhad, ascetics, Ubud, worshippers, Wu'az or Mudhakirun, preachers. These seekers and teachers, according to Sulaymi's Tabaqat al-Sufiyya, were known in the first few centuries of Islamic history by various names, al-Al-Marifa, al-Al-Hakika, al-Arifun, al-Zalakun, al-Zuhad, al-Fuqara etc. At times they were named after their particular teachers, al-Hakimiyya, al-Halajiyya, al-Qasariyya. They were distinguished by local qualifications related to etiquettes and occupation.
It seems most probable that the mainstream of Islamic mysticism in the 3rd/9th century i.e., the Baghdadi school adopted the name Sufiyya.
It is also possible that this term was initially related to certain ascetical groups. It was not until the second half of the 4th/10th century, as a result of the compilatory activity, that the term Sufiyya and Tasawwuf became the comprehensive term for Muslim mystics and Islamic mysticism at large, including all the various paths and schools within its scope. Figures such as Uwais al-Qarni, Harim bin Hiyan, Hasan al-Basri, and Sayyid ibn al-Musab are the first known mystics in Islam. Rabia was a female Sufi, known for her love and passion for God. These are seven well-known schools of Sufism: Chishtiyya, Qadriyya, Sohrawardiyya, Naqshbandiyya, Ovaisha, Shadhiliya, and Jarahiyya. Greater than when the universe huddles to serve a Sufi? The beginning of Ilhad deviation in Tasawwuf. After the demise of the Prophet, a power struggle ensued. It continued and intensified after the end of the caliphate of the first four caliphs. An inevitable outcome of it was the paradigmatic shift of emphasis from Quran and Sunnah to the preservation of city-state's essential elements, Islam, fiqh, hadith, and ritualistic performances. Quran was left merely for recitation and garnering blessings. The use of jihad for the spread of virtues in Islam was relegated to armed struggles, preserving the state boundaries and its laws and curbing dissent in the absence of the conspicuous concepts of human rights, rights of expression, rights of association, etc. Dynastic rules further exacerbated the situation because the laws enshrined in Quran were detrimental to their absolutism, Malukiyat, because according to these laws, sovereignty belongs to God, and these monarchs/rulers become subservient to him, hence the visibility and emphasis on Quran reduced to the minimum. Sufis skirted their responsibilities towards the masses and resorted to taqliya solitude instead, developing eccentric thoughts and practices deviating from the Quran and Sunnah. Greek thought filled this vacuum with indelible effects, visible to this day in the writings and thoughts of many contemporary Muslim scholars. Sufis' excuse for these ijtihad or ibtidat deviations is their ijtihad, which is untenable. According to compiler Sulaimi, Sufi Malamashi's main objective from the end of the 10th century onwards, both explicitly and implicitly, however, has been to present a picture of a uniform spiritual tradition based on the reconciliation of the normative extroverted religious aspect of Islam, Sharia, with the individualistic, introverted, experiential vision of its reality, Haqqaqa. In this endeavor, the didactic and practical implications of this reconciled version have become the bone and marrow of Sufism. A. Improvised, excerpt from a thesis by Sarah Saviri. Distancing from Quran, abandonment of Da'o-Tabli, Suluk-e-Mohammadi, and relegation of Ihsan to mere good treatment of others, the relegation of jihad to city-state boundaries, and quelling dissent, were the main reasons for the ilhad deterioration in Sufi doctrine. Some would include a disregard of usul al-fiqh also. Note. Removal of jihad from the Sufi panoply of Mujahida was well received in the West, calling Sufi Islam a peaceful version of Islam. The anti-tasawuf point of view is that Sufism is a bid'ah, innovation, due to the creation of a parallel system, tariqat, to the shariat of Quran and Sunnah, based on something not even remotely mentioned in them. The term tasawuf was never in use in the first 200 years of Islam. The term parallel system was first used by a contemporary scholar Amin Islahi. Imam Ibn Taymiyyah, Imam Qayyam, and Imam Abdul Wahhab, Nahdi, have also vehemently criticized Sufism. The ranks people acquire under the Sharia system will be granted in the hereafter, as a reward for their performance in the temporal world. Such as Shahid, Saleh, Wali, Mukarrabun, etc. On the other hand, stations such as Kutub, Naqib, and Autad, etc. are acquired/allotted in this world to carry out the instructions of God accordingly, facilitating the functioning of the universe. These ranks are not mentioned anywhere in Quran or Sunnah. An obvious question, therefore, would beg to be answered. Were angels not enough for Allah to carry out these occult duties? The cosmic hierarchy of the Kutub. Cosmic hierarchy is the way for the ensured existence of spiritual power throughout the cosmos. Two descriptions of the hierarchy come from notable Sufis. The first is Ali Hujwari's Divine Court. There are 300 Akyar, excellent ones, 40 Abdul, substitutes, 7 Abrar, piously devoted ones, 4 Atad, pillars, 3 New Kaaba, leaders, and 1 Kutub. The second version is from Ibn Arabis, a smaller, somewhat different, and more exclusive structure. There are 8 Nujaba, nobles, 12 Nukaba, 7 Abdul, 4 Atad, 2 Ama, guides, and the Kutub. Temporal Kutub. There are two kinds of Kutubs in Sufism, temporal Kutub and cosmic Kutub. They are connected, which guarantees that God is present in the world at all times. The temporal Kutub is known as the Helper or Al-Ghath and is located in a person on earth. The cosmic Kutub manifests in the temporal Kutub as a virtue, 2-in-1, that is traceable back to Al-Halaj. The temporal Kutub is the spiritual leader for the earthbound saints. It is imperative that all beings, secret, animate, and inanimate, must give the Kutub their pledge, which accords him great authority. Exempted from his jurisdiction, are the people under the jurisdiction of the angels. Jinn, under the jurisdiction of Qadir. And those who belong to the 10th stratum of Rijal al-Ghaib. Occult men, I guess, like Shia imams. Due to the nature of the Kutub, the location where he resides, whether temporal or cosmic, is questionable. It is thought by most that the Kutub is corporeally or spiritually present in Mecca at the Kaaba, referred to as his maqam, station. However, it is worth noticing that the belief in God being present in the world at all times is contradictory to the Ash'ariya doctrine, a prominent orthodox Sunni school of thought. It is because God being present in the world would render God having limitations and likening him to his creations, i.e., anthropomorphism, which constitutes a major sin. Perhaps the previous editor might have taken the reference from an unknown source for its authenticity, which is crucial in the Islamic ways of narration. The language of Sufi is a notable style of writing in the Persian language that is full of novel spiritual ideas and metaphors. It indicates the need for not taking their wordings literally if it seems against the Islamic teachings. Cosmic Kutub. The cosmic kutub is the axis of the universe in a higher dimension, from which originates the power, ultimately from Allah, of the temporal kutub. A most important thing to be mindful of is that the proponents of Sufism are not only eminent Sufis but also scholars of Islam, who do not consider these parallel systems in conflict. They sometimes even converge them, either clearly or in an abstract sense. An example is the acquisition of Faizan from and through the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. According to critics of Tasawwuf, the purity of self in Sufism seems achieved better through Tariqat than through Shariat. Sufism propagates two kinds of prophethoods. 1. Specific to the appointed prophets such as Moses, Jesus, and Muhammad, peace upon all. 2. General prophethood, available to Sufis by acquisition through meditative exhortations. Hence, they conclude that the station of Wilayah is superior to the prophet. Sufis, also known by other names such as Hakim, and Sheikh, are not dependent on the contemporary prophet or Prophet Muhammad for Faizan. Instruction/guidance/ilka or tafhim. They get it directly from the source wherefrom the angels get it to the prophet. They are, nevertheless, ordained by the divine to support and acknowledge the prophet to keep the sanctity of the institution of prophethood intact. To justify, they have devised several pseudonyms, alias, such as Baruzi, Zali, and Tabai prophet. According to them, this parallel system is not derived from the Quran, Hadith, or Sunnah but devised by famous scholars and Sufis like Unayd Baghdadi and then fine-tuned by several others such as Muhammad bin Shahab Shirawardi, Shah Walallah Dilvi, Sheikh Ahmed Sirhindi, Ibn Arabi, and Imam Ghazali, etc. Sufism claims that prophets only get the title of prophet, whereas Sufis get much more than that from the divine. Sufis also claim that Quran, Hadith, and Sunnah are for lay people, whereas, Sufis get the real essence of reality through their practices, experiences, and observations which usually cannot be logically and rationally explained to lay people. For example, the oneness of God explained in Quran, as per Sufis, is for the lay people. Sufis, therefore, have desiccated it further in three levels of understanding. 1. For those close to God, 2. Those closer than closer to God, and finally, 3. Surah Rububiyat, the secrets of Godhood. Imam Ghazali says in his book that according to the Hadith, traditions, of Gnostics, re-evaluation of the secret of Godhood is kufr. He further elaborates that the Hujjah of an esteemed Sufi prevails over that of the Quran and Hadith and that the haq moves wherever they, Sufis, move to and is the haq what comes off their tongues. Here is the psychological makeup of the Sufi mindset in which they function. It explains, and in some ways justifies, their progressive and perceptual mind forming concepts out of the absence ghiba. In Sufi episteme, there are two opposing and conflicting levels of consciousness. One is outright acceptance, which through knowledge accepts the reality of the unknown, becomes content, and elaborates it in detail. Other is progressive, which ponders on it through a perceived presence in absentia, ghiba. This perceived presence in absentia lacks the element of substantiation, hence cannot be explained rationally and logically, for the consciousness cannot become content with any idea, ilm/knowledge/truth, formed out of absence. For a conscious mind to accept and crystallize ideas, truth, obtained through knowledge, the extraction of its meanings from the text must be actualized in general and in an open verifiable plane. Sufism's fault line. In moving from exoteric to esoteric realm. Sufism, as opposed to other systems of epistemology, uses an unconventional mode of extraction/formation of meaning/rationale/arguments at the Gnostic level of faith, through a progressive process, from the text and expresses them in detail. A Sufi mindset creating a perceived presence of meanings in a vacuum through progressive process compels him to seek beneficence and rationality, authority, of the faith in the unseen spheres of knowledge, a higher spiritual dimension. Consciousness accepts the imagination and transforms it into an elaborate form. Among several others, a few prominent ones, who espouse the above mindset are, Ibn Arabi, Ghazali, Abu Talib Maki, Ismail Harwi, Shah Budd-Din Shirawardi, Shah Wali Ullah, Shah Ismail, and Ahmed Sirhindi. In my opinion, Sufis, in a Sufi trance or solipsistic mode, contrary to the Islamic principle of deduction, apply the inductive or adjunctive principle to the meanings of the text and come up with what is beyond rational explanation. The best example would be that of monotheism, Tawhid. They represent an extremely introverted reaction to extroverted and ascetic forms of spirituality, Zuhd. Over time, This reaction took various shapes and forms, some of them utterly outstripping all religious and social norms, as, for instance, the Kalandariya. Yet, in the formative period of the 9th century, Safi teachers proposed a system, in which sincere self-scrutiny and self-criticism built into a highly acclaimed social code based on chivalry and altruism. As exemplified by the Futuwa. In that, the call for abandoning any outward marks of distinction or any inward claim to spiritual superiority and practice in adherence to the Islamic Sharia was enshrined. Salami's Epistles presents the evidence of an effort to a. place the early Sufism, Malamachia in the arena of the mystical tradition within Islam. B. promoting the Nishapuri Sufi teachers. Their distinctive teaching techniques as the purest in the mystical tradition. C. vindicating them of the accusation of nonconformity and antinomianism. And improvised, excerpt from a thesis by Sarah Saviri. Note. The endeavors of self-scrutiny and self-criticism here are to curb the behavioral ostentation, not the speculative interpolations in the text and religious practices, whereas, Salami's list of efforts seems to show Sufism absolved of these deviations. Sufis' practice of tarikat and their intellectual wanderings, in most orders, are at odd with Quran and Sunnah, Shariat. They, nevertheless, consider Wahhabis, Salafis, and Ikhwan as their nemesis. Sufis' usual devotional practices are Muraqba, Zikr, Hadra, Qawwali, Sama and Kalwat, Kilwa. Colossal mistake. Its title, Tasawwuf, has been, of non-Islamic origin, derived from the word Suf, wool dress made of which was done by some earlier companions of the Prophet. The word Sufi is not from Quran or Hadith. According to some accounts, these companions emulated Prophet Jesus Christ, who used to wear a woolen dress, whereas Prophet Muhammad tried it once but did not like it. Title Tasawwuf by some accounts, started being used 200 years after the Hijra. According to the solitary opinion of Dr. Israr Ahmed, its origin seems to be from the Greek word, Sophi. I tend to subscribe to this hypothesis, for the word Tasawwuf had not been in vogue in Islamic literature in the first few hundred years. The assumption of non-Islamic foreign title turned conservative elements, partisans of Quran and Sunnah, like Imam Ibn Taymiyyah, Ibn Qayyim, and later, Imam Muhammad ibn Abdul Wahhab, against the Sufi movement along with its contents. It is noteworthy that, a concerted opposition and criticism of Tasawwuf killed the quest for, spiritualism, deeper meanings of Islam and Quran. In general, by all of the above but in Asia particularly, by Saudi-led Wahhabi movement. Apart from the title Tasawwuf, it is also blamed that, Sufi ideology and thinking flourished during the times of the likes of Muhyiddin ibn Arabi, Jalal ad-Din Rumi, and Imam Ghazali. Their translations of Greek philosophical work into Arabic during the 3rd Islamic century left an indelible mark on many aspects of Sufism, resulting in Greek pantheism becoming an integral part of the Sufi doctrine. Sufis adopted monism and wifely devotion from Vaishnava Vedantic school and bhakti and yogic practices from the Vaishnava Vedantic school. By that time, the popularity of Vedantic pantheism among the Sufis had reached its zenith. By examining the mystic doctrines of Christianity, Hinduism, Taoism, and other religions, it becomes clear how closer Sufism is to these religions than to Islam. A suspect assertion. An Indian Sufi prince, Dara Shikoh, is also blamed for translating Vedantic scriptures into Persian, exchanging views with Hindu scholars, and inducting some of their practices and traditions into Sufism. It would be unfair to say that foreign thoughts only had a bad influence and nothing positive. Sufis, the real scholars/philosophers of Islam, found new vistas of rationalizing thoughts and concepts because of it. In my opinion, they could not always take a critical view of these alien thoughts and concepts by scrutinizing them in the light of the Quranic text and Islamic corpus juris, hence assuming their validity, for most of the foreign philosophers were conscious of God in monotheistic, polytheistic or an abstract form. Greater than does Islam support pantheism? Pro-Tasawwuf point of view. A study was carried out and published by the Indonesian Journal of Mysticism to determine the relationship between Sufism and Islam and test the popular assumption that Sufi ideas and practices corrupt the original Islamic teachings, thus constitute innovation, bid A. This quantitative study focuses on the Raza'il-Junayd, Epistles of Junayd, as the primary source of data, and concludes that Sufism is not only based on authentic Islamic teachings but represents the spiritual core of Islam. Junayd al-Baghdadi formulated its three central concepts of the covenant, mithaq, annihilation, fana, and unification, tawhid. Junayd successfully reconciled the spiritual concepts of tasawwuf and the legal concepts of fiqh and thus helped free Sufism from the stigma of heresy and integrated it into mainstream Islam. Abstract improvised. According to this point of view, tasawwuf's purpose and goal are Islamic, despite deviations, at places, from the Quran and Sunnah of the Prophet, which is 1. Freedom from ignorance and attainment of gnosis. 2. Attainment of civility, takzib, and purification of the self. 3. Shielding of the heart and obtaining the radiance of Noor, Tajjali-Sufi experiences. 4. Sincerity and servitude, distancing from worldly enchantments and focusing on God. And 5. Practicing Sufi tariqat by serving the masses, an exoteric manifestation of Islamic teachings. Some scholars put the purification of the soul differently. For them, the first stage is of takliya, freeing or emptying the soul/nafs, the second stage is of taliya, adoration, and finally, the third one is of tajaliya, spiritual experiences, to reach a stage of humility. They also stress the need for Sufis to learn Usul al-Fiqh. A prominent Usooli Sufi and critic of Sufism at the same time, among many others, was Imam Ghazali. Sufi tariqat, within the confines of Shariat, makes inroads into haqiqat, reality, and gains marfat. Gnosis, through mujahida. Endeavor/struggle. Sufis try to achieve the station of Ihsan through devotion and by practicing behavioral betterment with fellow human beings. Suluk, and tazkiyah-e-nafs, purification of the soul/nafs. Shah Wali Ullah explains in his book Al-Taf al-Qudus. Since there is no way mentioned in Quran and Sunnah to achieve the highest degree of the religion, Ihsan, especially after the demise of the Prophet, Sufis through their Ishad discovered a way and established as an art known as tariqat. Islam morphs into Iman, faith/belief, and then into Ihsan. A stage, a believer becomes conscious of God, either as if he is seeing Him, or being seen by Him. In Sufi terminology, attainment of it is sometimes called station of wilaya. It is the process/effort of beautification of soul/heart/thought/worship, etc. Haljaza'u ilisani ila ilisanu. Is there any reward for good other than what is best? Q. 55-60, and Allah loves mezzanine. Quran. Man is created, with two opposing and conflicting tendencies, angelic and animalistic. Man is created, with two opposing and conflicting tendencies, angelic and animalistic. There are, however, three stages of faith, iman. Initially, it may be acquired merely by profession, association, and addition of acts of worship, rituals and practices, to it, known as tashari'i faith. It constitutes a blind faith, the real one, however, can be acquired through Quran and Zirk, remembrance. A contemplation upon the signs of Godan, the form of creation, as repeatedly enjoined in Quran, makes one to delves into the intellectual/spiritual realm, attaining the stage of Ihsan, an ingrained or crystallized, muta'ajar, the highest echelon of faith. An essence of the Islamic faith, Sufis adopt various meditative exercises such as zikr, muraqabah, salat, etc. to hearken the dormant potentialities of the soul. It is known as the tahrir yor ruh, warming up of the soul. Initial iman may have breadth, but for intellectual and spiritual depth, basira, a pondering over Quran, establishing salat and practicing azkar masnuna, practice/sanctioned by Prophet Muhammad, is inevitable. For self-development, mujahida-e-nafs, Sufis follow these practices invariably. Taqwiya means strengthening the angelic, malakuti, self to combat the animalistic bahimi. Tendency. Hagjiya means nourishing the, malakuti, self to stay strong to combat the animalistic bahimi, tendency. These two are for the malakuti, good/angelic, self. Takzib, means constant training/taming of the, bahimi, self. Self-control. Tazkiyah, constant purification of the, bahimi, self and vigil against impurities of any sort. These two are for the bahimi, evil/animalistic, self. A man is born with a soul imbued with consciousness, cognizance, of God, relationship, connection, with Him, and longing for Him, which often, with a neglectful passage of time, and various temporal contaminants, becomes obscure or dormant, so needs to be revitalized/reactivated through remembrance and above-mentioned means. It, in spiritual terminology, is known as tahrir or ruh, freedom of the soul. Ordinary human beings are usually busy preserving the exteriors, like life, body, and self. Sufis endeavor to subdue their lower self with the final goal of tazkiyah-e-qalb. It is noteworthy that, in Islam, the addressee is an individual, the fundamental constituent of a model community/society is the end goal. Like Ansar Mahajir Brotherhood. In Western societies, secular philosophies or social sciences, however, an individual is addressed in opposition to the society as a whole. As in Hobbesian individualism. Apart from the above, there are fundamental practices to be undertaken by the Sufis. 1. Firmness in prayers. 2. Fasting. 3. Spending from what one has. 4. Serving and preparing the masses for temporal and eternal worlds. #4th of May change according to pro and against ikamatu din school to thought. And if the circumstances are conducive, in terms of religious dominance, proselytization and enforcement of sharia, etc. dawa o tabli, performing hajj. 2. If the circumstances are not conducive, they should get involved in establishing fairness and justice, adlo insaf, and emancipation of the people from subjugation, oppression, and exploitation by the ruler or the system, enabling them to fulfill their obligations. 1. Again, these may change, with the exception of mandatory ones, according to the pro and against ikamatu din school of thoughts. Historically, Sufis failed in this pursuit and instead resorted to solitude. They embarked on quantitative intensification of innovations and Sufi practices for quenching the spiritual thirst. Sufis neglected the qualitative intensification of Suluki, Mohammadi for the purpose. It culminated in distancing from the Quran that gave way to foreign influences, to the inclusion of enchanting stories of the Sufis, spurious and weak ahadith, and frivolous traditions and sayings of the companions. According to some critic scholars, a shift in acquiring nearness to God through supererogatory prayers instead of obligatory ones also occurred. In my humble opinion, this objection does not hold much water. Inevitability of jihad in Islam, pro ikamatu din POV. According to Quran, there are four ways to achieve perfection of the faith, deen. 1. Attainment of solid faith, iman bil qalb. Here deen is taken in the sense of a state. 2. Absolute servitude, itaat. Here worship and submission are assumed as the training for the protection of the state. Jihad. 3. Invitation and preaching, dawah o tabli, voluntary proselytization, and finally, 4. Establishment of an Islamic state, ikamat ud deen, dominance, creating and maintaining an Islamic state as a duty enshrined in faith. The last one includes jihad, surah, tauba 33, qasas 70 and shura apostrophe a 13, derived from the additional demand of the concept of aluiyya, whereby it is supposed that God cannot be without a rule, so it becomes incumbent upon adherents to establish his rule/governance and dominance of Islam. Contemporary Muslim stalwarts like Maulana Maududi and many others fervently advocated this conception, and some extremist movements also followed this strain of thought. I disagree with this interpretation, for it seems a distortion of the original message of the verses. 1. Sufis failed to employ jihad in its manifest, jihad bil Quran, dimension, for people's emancipation and training, enabling them to fulfill their religious obligations, including jihad bil saif, should it become an absolute necessity. From the point of view of perceptual additional demands created by stretching the original/intrinsic meanings of the verses, it would not, however, constitute an obligation on the part of the Sufis. 1. Jihad, in its extreme sense, jihad bil saif, may become obligatory only when, either non-Muslims, group or state, attack unilaterally, unprovoked, or if and when the circumstances permit the Islamic rule and enforcement of Islamic laws, after formal communication with the non-Muslims giving them options, itimam e hujjat, to either convert to Islam, or accept Islamic government while sticking to their religion by paying jizya, guaranteeing them in return, protection of life and property, freedom of religion, and association, etc., and yet they refuse. In the present times, given the situation of the Muslims in the world, it is neither probable nor practical, and according to against POV school, it is neither permissible nor required. Moreover, it is highly illogical to assume or interpret for God to seek dominance in the temporal world through his creation by obligating them to embark on the jihad bil saif. His dominant rule is inevitable, bil haq, by virtue of his will, not contingent on anyone's efforts, assumptions, acceptance, or rejection, the essence of the verses misinterpreted. Note, self, heart, and soul are often interchangeably used. The lower self, nafs al-amara, cannot be annihilated. It can be subdued/trained, for it has its own importance and role. For example, in jihad, killing an enemy or in sexual intimacy with the spouse. It is the bahimi trait/lower self which will be at play. Sexual intercourse, no matter how socialized or sanctified situations it may occur in, will remain a beastly act. Rejection of the inevitability of jihad, against ikamatu din POV. This group of thought rejects the above point of view with logical arguments deduced from the original meanings of the verses supported by the earlier exegetes and scholars. This section rejects the social and political imperatives arising through additional demands assigned to the verses and assuming them as the original. Moreover, when an additional assertion is so created shall be subservient to the changing circumstance and situations, whereunder, it may weaken, change or disappear altogether. Therefore, this school does not envisage demand for establishing an Islamic state, establishing the dominance of religion, or even taking up arms against a peaceful non-Muslim people or state. According to antagonists of jihad, jihad waged by the Prophet, enjoined in Surah Tawbah, was specific to his and Khulafa'i Rashidin's times. This obligation ended with them. However, the permissibility necessitated freeing people from oppression and injustice, if and when possible, remains intact. According to this POV, the concepts of dhimmi and jizya have also become redundant. After the signing of the Pact of Medina by the Prophet, it is replaced by nusratu din, excellence in performance and presentation, making the religion Islam, prepossessing for the people to join in. Hence, there remains no compulsion to wage jihad to establish an Islamic state for the dominance of Islam. Allah is fully competent in creating anything through kun without material sources or causes. 4,600 words, 18.24 minutes reading. Researched and composed by Shakir Mumtaz. Author, thinker, analyst. The USA.